Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening. The number is 888-914-9149. We're going to get straight to the phones now. Let's start off with Susan in Nashville. Good morning, Susan.
Hi there. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Hi. So I apologize, but I'm asking you to kind of clear up a little bit of a family, like, question.
Sure.
My son's in town. He's 20, and we were all going out to breakfast, my husband and I and my son, and we drove by a Mason's Lodge. And so we were just kind of talking about it, and my son, who actually knows a lot about Catholicism, he's president of his Catholic university group. It's amazing. We're so proud of him. But he was saying that if you become a Mason and you're Catholic, you get excommunicated. And I know there was always, like, you know, some undertones of like, oh yeah, you don't join the Masons, but I don't really understand why. None of us really understand. Could you kind of just explain to us what's the deal with the Masons?
Okay, sure. Well, that's a big topic. So Freemasonry, as it's also called, is not typically what you see in the United States. It's not, I mean, in the United States, it's sort of understood to be a kind of fraternal organization that helps the community, raises money for children's hospitals, in the case of the Shriners, like civic-minded men who want to get together in a club. That's sort of the public face of it, and that's very much what most men in the United States would experience. But Freemasonry predates this. This goes back to the time of the Enlightenment in France and England and in Germany. And so that would be going back to, say, the 1700s, the early 1700s. And Freemasons purport to be the, you might say, the modern personification of the actual stonemasons that built the Temple of Solomon, you know, thousands of years ago. So they have this fanciful history, and they believe that Freemasonry has always existed from that time, and that it was a fraternal order that was replete with secret knowledge, with information that only the initiated members would have access to. Now, from an historical standpoint, that part is not true. But when it really arose as a potent force in Europe, it was part of the, it was in some ways, it was almost sort of the inevitable consequence of some of the negative and destructive aspects of the Enlightenment. Not all of which was negative and destructive, but part of the Enlightenment project entailed this idea that empiricism was superior to any claims of divine revelation. So empiricism, not only in science, but also empiricism in philosophy as a way of trying to ascertain knowledge and understand first principles, etc., that trumped or superseded the Bible, the church, Jesus, and religion in general. And so one of the features of Freemasonry is that it tells its members that you can be, doesn't matter what religion you are, you can be a Freemason. You can be a Catholic, you could be a Protestant, you could be Muslim, you could be Jewish, you could be anything. And this is something that is, first of all, directly contrary to the gospel. It's a form of this, of the heresy of indifferentism. And this heresy holds that, you know, there are many paths up the mountain, and you can be one or the other. What religion you are doesn't really matter. The main thing is that you love God and you're trying to be a good person, trying to go to heaven. Well, that's condemned by Jesus, first of all. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So the exclusivity of Jesus Christ as God and him saying, come, follow me, believe in what I'm teaching you, it is directly, Freemasonry's claim is directly contrary to the claims of Jesus. So that's one big part of it right there. Another big part of it is that, among other things, the Freemasons are told that if they ever reveal any of the secrets of the lodge, that because of these blood oaths that they have sworn, they swear oaths secretly with their, you know, typically if you're a Christian, you'd have your hand on the Bible and you swear these oaths that you want somebody to disembowel you, to mutilate you, to kill you if you should ever reveal these secrets that the only the initiated Masons would have. Now, that in itself is a mortal sin, but on top of it, you're actually swearing before God that you want someone else to commit the mortal sin of murder against you. That's another huge thing. And lastly, and I could go into much more detail, but it would be maybe overload, but another big part of it is that Freemasonry, unlike Christianity, certainly unlike the Catholic faith, it teaches that God is basically this grand architect. In fact, when you see the letter G in Masonic symbolism, it's referring not only to geometry, but also refers to God, the grand architect. And so there's a, you might say, a naturalistic view of God. And that is completely contrary to what the Catholic Church teaches, which is that God is transcendent. God created everything. God is not a Mason. God is not the architect of anything. God is the creator of everything. But Freemasonry sort of dumbs God down into this grand personage who is designing and building things. And that, of course, is not at all who God is. So those are three big issues right there. And we can add as a fourth one would be that historically, Freemasonry has worked assiduously in the background, trying to subvert the Catholic Church and try to infiltrate the Catholic Church, trying to confuse Catholics, thwarting the Church's efforts around the world in various ways. So that too would be, even just from an historical standpoint, another big reason why the Catholic Church says you can't be a Mason. Catholics cannot be Masons. The Church's canon law stipulates that. Not by name anymore. When the 1983 Code of Canon Law came out, the word Masonry was dropped. But the force, as Pope Benedict XVI, maybe when he was still Cardinal Ratzinger, he clarified that the force of the prior prohibitions against membership in Freemasonry remain, and it remains in effect for Freemasonry. So there's kind of a long answer. I don't know if that answers your question specifically, Susan, but does that help a little bit?
It absolutely does. And what I was kind of thinking that you were going to say, because I've heard it from other Catholics, is that there is an element of like Satanism in Freemasonry as well. And I didn't hear you say that. So I'm guessing that there's not.
Well, no, I would argue that there is, in a sense, because it is a satanic principle that Jesus is not Lord. You know, the Bible says that somebody who comes to you and tells you that Jesus is not God, Jesus is not the true Lord, then that is an antichrist doctrine. And if we want to put it in that terminology, that's certainly inherent in Freemasonry's belief system. They definitely believe that. So there is, I can see a direct connection between not formal Satanism, like worshiping Satan or anything like that, but this is a worldview that is definitely, as the Bible says, antichrist. So there's so much here.
Thank you.
I mean, it's a very interesting and large topic. Thankfully, there are books that have been written about this. I would read books by John Salza, who was a 32nd degree Mason, and his books include Why Catholics Cannot Be Masons, and also I think it's Freemasonry Unmasked, I think is the name of the other one. But he, coming from or drawing upon his own experience for years as a Mason, he's got a lot of inside information to share. I think you'd find that interesting.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Just one final thing. My husband and I last summer went to a friend of ours' funeral, and he was a Mason, and they had a Mason ceremony that we attended. I mean, is that... From what I heard, it felt very Christian. You know, they quoted the Bible and seemed like, you know, they really missed him. And it was, to me, it felt very touching. But I mean, do you recommend that Catholics do not go to Mason funeral ceremonies?
Yeah, I would avoid it. I would avoid Freemasonry completely. It's the people, I think, especially here in the United States, I realize I'm repeating myself, but I think it's worth repeating, that I think there are many, many men in the United States for whom Freemasonry is just kind of like a civic public service community based organization where they can do pancake breakfasts and raise money and help people. And for them, that's what it is. But they don't realize the reality of Freemasonry in the background. They're sort of unwitting participants in something that's much more nefarious than they realize. So I don't fault individual members per se, unless they know better, in which case I do fault them. But no, I would have nothing to do with Freemasonry. Interesting that you mention it. I'll just give this to you in passing, Susan. When my wife and I bought our very first house, we bought it from a lovely elderly woman whose husband was a 33rd degree Mason. And he had since died. And I mean, she was as old as the hills. So, I mean, we're talking about stuff like back to not the Civil War, back to like World War II, and maybe even before that. And because she was moving, I think, to like a rest home after she sold the house to us, she left a lot of things there, including a lot of his Masonic paraphernalia. And I just got rid of it. You know, the regalia, I think the one thing I did keep was a book of Freemasonic ceremonies. I have that in my research library somewhere. Everything else I got rid of. So I didn't want any of those things in my home because of their connection with Freemasonry. So to answer your question, I would encourage Catholics not to attend any kind of Freemasonic service at all. Just stay away from it. Thanks, Susan. I appreciate it. Let's go now to, let's go to Karen in Virginia. Hello, Karen.
Hi there, Patrick. I just have a quick question, and then I'm very interested in your answer.
Okay.
My son, who sent me a book called The Didache, and a small book, and I wanted more information because as a lifelong Catholic, I don't ever remember this being mentioned.
Okay. If it's the Didache, it's pronounced Didache, so the CH is pronounced
Didache,
like a K.
Okay.
Yeah, Didache. And that refers, coming from the Greek, to the 12 apostles and their teaching, specifically their teaching. And I wouldn't say that it was like, it wasn't written by the 12 apostles, but it is a synopsis of many of the teachings that came to us from the 12 apostles. And that includes, for example, the church's arrangement for worship on Sunday. And worshiping on Sunday, for example, instead of the seventh day of the week, which is Saturday. So it talks about the sacraments. It talks about baptism. It talks about communion or the Eucharist. It talks about how to gather and how you can fast and prepare. What were the prayers like that the earliest Catholics prayed? So if indeed it's the actual Didache, and there are some books that are called by that name that have nothing to do with it, but if it's actually that, then that's a very good thing. And it dates from about early in the second century would be most likely. So that would be maybe, say, the 120s to 150s, somewhere in there. So if that's what you have, that's a very good book to read.
Which one is the original? Because there seem to be so many, I noticed when I looked it up.
Well, if it's the Didache, do you have it handy? I mean, can you read it to me, like what it says in the beginning?
I do. I'll have it right here.
All right.
Looking at it. And I know there's more than one. It is the Didache with the original Greek text, bilingual English Greek. And then it's written in the bottom in Greek. Mm-hmm. And I don't see who wrote it. I mean, who?
Well, it's an anonymous document, but it purports to be a synthesis of the teachings of the 12 apostles, which it is. It is that. Now, does it let me give an example. Does it talk about, for example, the two ways, like in chapter one, does it say there are two ways, one of life and one of death? And there is a great difference between these two ways?
I see. It doesn't have a course of content. The first
just go to the first chapter.
One, two ways there are, one of life and one of death.
Okay, that's the Didache. That's the authentic Didache.
Okay. Is it something that I would be able to read? And
yeah, absolutely. I encourage Catholics to read it. I encourage non-Catholics to
read it.
Because what you've got there is a Polaroid snapshot of the early church right around the year 100.
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great information.
Glad I could help.
Have a good day.
Karen. Call anytime, please. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Christy in Jefferson, Wisconsin. Hi, Christy. Hi, Christy. Welcome. Here we go.
Hi, Patrick. So sorry.
Hi there.
So sorry. I was with a patient who just slipped out. Tonight at a meeting in our town, and here in a little town in the Midwest, mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about an issue we had at our farmer's market a couple of weekends ago, where they had a drag queen come and perform at our mm-hmm. family farmer's market, and there's pictures, and it was very seductive and positions that are undescribable. Mm-hmm. And I just feel called to go and hopefully be one of the ones that will stand up for our youth and for our community. And I guess I just, what would you do if that happened in your community and you had a chance to address those who are for it and supporting it?
What forum would you have to address them in?
There's a meeting tonight at the municipal building,
okay.
and I guess to discuss, because it did create quite a division in our community.
I can imagine. For some reason, this ridiculous drag queen obsession that has kind of arisen out of nowhere, I know it's been around for years, but all of a sudden now, it's all the rage, and everybody who favors this, they think that this is somehow a benefit to society, a benefit to children, to see burly men dressed up as women reading a storybook. Come on. So I share your view of this as something that you would want to stand up against. And if you've got an opportunity to speak out at a meeting like this, I'm guessing they give you, what, 60 seconds or 2 minutes or something to say your piece. If you have that opportunity, I would just say that this is, you know, why are you forcing someone's private sexual activity on the public? Why are you doing that? There's no benefit to it. There's nothing that we derive by way of benefit from this. And it's a misuse of city funds. I don't know if it's a municipal event or a county event, but you could say it's a misuse of our funds if people are being paid for this. And it's also it's injurious to children's innocence that they should see this. Now, keep in mind, that's exactly what they want. They want the children to see this. They want that. They want nothing more than for that to happen. But as a parent, you're absolutely right and within your rights to stand up and say, no, I disapprove of this and we don't want this. Now, I'm guessing you're probably going to be on the losing end of this, because not only is the momentum strongly moving in that direction, but the people who control such things are not likely to say, oh, okay, well, Christian Jefferson said it's not a good idea, so guess maybe we won't do it. The likelihood of that happening seems nil to me. But at least you will have stood up and raised your voice. And my guess is that other people who feel just like you do will do the same thing, which would be good. You know, even if you can't stop it, at least you can raise your voice against it while there's still time to do so.
Okay. Yes, thank you. I think it's time that we all start standing up. Hopefully, Catholics, yeah. Christians across the country will. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm so sorry that we have to deal with such things like this, but this is the world we live in, right? And Jesus wants you here for a reason. You're not here by accident. He has a plan for you. We're going to take a break, and I'll come back. The number is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. I will be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, I don't want to be without you, because if I'm without you, I'm without a show. And I like doing the show. I hope you like it too. 888-914-9149. An email came in. This is from Marty in Mesa, Arizona, listening on 1310 AM. Thanks, Marty. So I'll dispense with the preamble. I appreciate the kind words, Marty. But the heart of his email is, a couple of weeks ago, you gave advice to a mother from Tempe, Arizona, to request from her daughter that she get married in the Catholic Church to do it for her mother. I'm not a canon lawyer, but wouldn't the daughter have grounds for an annulment? As I understand it, a person needs to give their full consent to being married. In this case, the daughter is being coerced to be married in the church by the mother, because she would never do so except to please her mother. Just a thought. And it's a good thought indeed, Marty, and I can see the point that you're trying to make here. It would not rise to that level, however. I, too, am not a canon lawyer, but I can tell you this much, that this would not be an infringement upon her freedom. And the reason is because the church requires that a Catholic be married in what's called, according to the canonical form. And simply put, kind of the most basic explanation of that would be that you have an obligation to get married in a church, in a Catholic church, and before the official witness, being a priest or bishop or even a deacon. And you have that obligation. It doesn't have to be a nuptial mass. It can be just the sacrament itself, but that is an obligation in order for the validity of the marriage. Now, this is not incumbent upon non-Catholics. The church does not request this of anybody else, but it does say that as a Catholic, you have this obligation, because your marriage is a public act. It's not something that's private. It's for the whole church. Even if you only have a few people there, it's still a public act in its essence. So for that reason, no, it would not be grounds for an annulment. If anything, it would be the mother helping the daughter to get married in a way that would not be invalid. And so if the mother just sat back and said nothing, and the daughter went and got married at the park, you know, or on top of Camelback Mountain or someplace like that, and that would be an invalid marriage. So actually, in a strange sort of way, it's actually the reverse of what you're wondering. And then the last point is, because the mother is encouraging her daughter to do the right thing, and the daughter's saying, well, for you, Mom, I'll do it, that's not an infringement upon her freedom. The daughter, of course, is ultimately free to do what she wants one way or the other. And if her mother is interceding and asking her to do the right thing for this reason, and the daughter, for her mother's sake, says, okay, Mom, I'll do it for you, I'd rather not get married in the church. I'd rather get married on top of Camelback Mountain. But because you're asking me to do this, I'll do it. That's not an infringement on her freedom. Therefore, it's not in itself an impediment to the validity of marriage. But that is a very interesting question you asked, and I'm glad you asked it. Thank you. Let's go now to the phones again. Let's go to Donna in Osage Beach, Missouri. Hi, Donna.
Good morning. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Two questions. My husband is a smoker, and we've been trying many things, and I was wondering, what are the thoughts about trying to do hypnosis?
This is a question I've been asked a few times over the years, Donna. I don't know if I have a really good answer for that. I think the answer is this, that if hypnosis is under some kind of legitimate medical supervision, where you have a medical doctor who maybe has some training in this, and it has been shown to bring some relief for a problem, that it could be okay. But as a general principle, I don't think hypnosis is morally permissible for this reason, that if assuming it's not a gimmick, assuming it's not a parlor trick, but it actually is a way for somebody to become susceptible to other people directing them to say and do certain things, that to me, on the face of it, would seem to be immoral, because it would be akin to being intoxicated, being inebriated, where you become so drunk or high that you now are easily controlled by somebody else and could do something or be told to do something that would be wrong. I think that in itself is wrong, because we have an obligation to maintain our sobriety. It doesn't mean you can't drink wine or have a beer. It doesn't mean that, but it means you have an obligation as a human being whose body is the temple of the Holy Spirit to maintain as best you can your own autonomy, your own self-awareness, your own agency, meaning that you're the one calling the shots for you. And if you turn that over in an illicit sort of way to somebody else who's going to subliminally induce you to say or do various things that you might not otherwise say or do, I think it's opening yourself up to a very dangerous, potentially dangerous situation. So I think that would be putting yourself into the occasion of sin. Therefore, I would say, under normal circumstances, I would say avoid that. But this is the asterisk. I still have this sense, without any kind of explicit teaching from the Catholic Church. There is no teaching from the Catholic Church on hypnosis per se. Like, you know, the Pope did not issue an encyclical letter about hypnosis. But I think as a general principle, if in some controlled circumstances it fell within the realm of actual medical treatment, that it could be okay under a situation like that for a specific purpose. So do you see what I mean? It's kind of a squishy answer, and I wish I had a better answer. I think I need to do a bit more research on that topic, but is that little bit that I just gave you, is even that a bit more helpful?
It does. It helps. I kind of was putting it in with the whole yoga and all that, where I know that's absolutely not, but okay. I do appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
One other question.
Before you go on to that, if you don't mind, do me a favor, well, do yourself a favor, really. Get in touch with the people at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. They're in the Philadelphia area. So ncbcenter.org is their website. And just check to see if they have any articles in their quarterly journal. If they have, I've missed them. I subscribe to the journal, but I don't remember there being any articles on the bioethical implications of hypnosis to stop smoking. But they might have something, and that would be worth reading. Okay. I'll have to go back and look at that myself.
I will do that. I appreciate that very much.
Sure.
If I can get him to quit, that would be wonderful. But next question, kind of based on that. We lived in Minnesota. We moved to Missouri because my husband's health is very poor, mm-hmm. and he wanted out of the cold. So we're here. My question on this is, once he passes, I do not intend to stay here. I'm going to go back to Minnesota.
Okay.
So with that, how important is it that you're buried with your spouse?
It's only important as it's important to you and to your spouse. It's a beautiful gesture. It's a beautiful symbol, but it's not required in any way, and it certainly does not have any effect on your eternal disposition, whether the two of you are buried side by side or not. If it's something meaningful and desirable for the two of you, then I would say try to do that if at all possible. It may also be, since you don't plan to stay where you are, you plan to move back to Minnesota, maybe the two of you can select where your burial plots will be, and then you can make the arrangements so that when the time comes, your husband would be buried there. That'd be another way to deal with that, so that when your turn comes, you could be buried together. But it's not required.
Would it be? Okay, that's good to know. Would it be, I know cremation is not what we really want to be doing,
mm-hmm.
but would it be an awful thing if I were to have him cremated because he's okay with it and put here until I moved and then mm-hmm. bring him with to...
His remains could be moved? Well, a few things there, mm-hmm. two things there. Number one, if you did decide, or he decided for cremation, you would not be able to have the urn at your home, if by here you mean like here at home. The church says no to that. But you could have the urn interred in a mausoleum or a columbarium at a Catholic cemetery near you, in which case it would be much easier than to transfer the remains to another cemetery in a different state. You could do it. Now, there would be an expense involved, and I don't know anything about that. That's one option. But as for cremation as such, and I understand, first of all, let me say, the church permits it now. It didn't used to, but it does now permit cremation. So I don't want to give anyone the impression that they're doing something contrary to the church's teaching, because cremation is permitted. I'm only sharing my own personal view on this issue. And that is, I find cremation horrifying because it's a deliberate destruction of the body. It's a destruction of the temple of the Holy Spirit. And for me, that is, it just sort of goes against everything that I know and believe about the dignity and the respect that should be shown to the body. It seems to strike against that. But I realize the church says it is okay if you choose to do that. So I'm only sharing my own personal view. So if you were coming to me as a friend and saying, what do you think about this? What would you say? I would say, I don't recommend cremation for that reason. Rather, I would recommend burial. I understand also that that's not always feasible financially, and that it is more expensive, maybe much more expensive, to be buried in the ground in a coffin than it would be to be cremated. And I take that into account as well. But if I had my druthers, I think that internment in a coffin in the ground is preferable over cremation. Again, just my personal perspective on that.
Yep, and I've heard you say that. So he is a veteran. Being buried in a veteran's cemetery, is that
something that's
that
totally
would be
fine.
Acceptable?
Totally fine. Yeah,
so we just need the priest to consecrate it first, or?
Yes. Now, typically, at least to my knowledge, military cemeteries often have a Catholic section of the cemetery where the ground is already hallowed. But even if it weren't, the priest who's going to preside over the burial would bless the ground, bless the coffin, and bless the ground. That's certainly the custom.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome, Donna.
Put me at ease. Thank you.
You're welcome. I know these are somber topics to contemplate, but yeah, it's part of life, right? Let's go now to Frank in Buckstown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Patrick. I think you already answered my phone earlier. It's about my granddaughter. Her marriage is now on the rocks, but she was married on the beach by I call him a renegade priest. She got it. Mm-hmm. It was an ad. I don't know where
a
she
rent
got
a priest?
The ad, but a priest. Hey? Pardon?
A rent-a-priest ad?
No, a yeah, I guess that's what renegade, rent. Yeah, you could call him either one. He wasn't. I don't know. He had left. He had the vestments and all, and but I don't think he was. He left. I think he left. I don't know what his status was, but they got an ad in the paper.
Yeah,
they answered it.
It's often called a rent-a-priest. So you're right, renegade. He's a renegade. He went off on his own. And he just, you know, did not remain in the clerical state. But, I mean, he's still considered a cleric, but he's, you know, he's living a life of, a vagabond, so to speak. So are you wondering if the marriage might have, the possibility of it being null as a result of that?
Yes.
Well, a couple questions. Was your granddaughter a baptized Catholic who had received her sacraments?
She's baptized, but I don't think she's been active in the last few years. She's in her, I guess, mid-20s.
Okay. Well, what the church, I believe, would tell you is that because she did not get married according to the canonical form, which I talked about a little while ago, which requires getting married in a church and getting married in the presence of an official witness, which would be a bishop, a priest, or a deacon, most commonly a priest, and deacons too. If she didn't do that, and if she didn't seek a dispensation from her bishop, and I'm guessing she probably didn't, that would, at least as far as the letter of the law is concerned, that would make it an invalid marriage. But she would still need to go through the process, if that's something she wanted to do, to find out. But on the face of it, it sure sounds to me like that would be an invalid marriage.
Yeah, but I don't feel it's my job to inform her of that. I mean, maybe if I was her mother or father, I would, but...
Could you talk to her mom and dad and suggest that they reason with her about this?
Oh yeah, yeah. I could talk to I talk to my daughter, and because they're split up now. And
I'm sorry to hear that. But in a way, maybe there is a silver lining here in that, you know, is she at all serious about coming back to the practice of her faith?
I don't know. She lives with her mother now. She's back with her children and her mother.
Okay. I realize it's a difficult and probably a very emotional issue for her. So yes, I mean, if you don't feel like you're the proper one to share that message with her, maybe her mom or dad can do that, and maybe you can encourage them to do so. I have to take a break though, Frank. Thank you. I'm coming right back right after this. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
At the intersection of faith and culture, the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We're back, as you can probably tell, 888-914-9149. Let's see here. Have a note. Let's see. That note's going to be a little too long to read. This one comes in from Christopher, listening in San Diego on 1000 AM. He says, regarding the woman who said she was kicked by the priest who busted her for lying on the altar to pray, some people refer to the sanctuary as the altar, so it's not clear to what extent the zeal for the Lord's house consumed him. Well, maybe so. Sounded to me like she knew exactly where she was. You know, she was up on the altar. So that being the case, I will take her at her word. I suppose what you're saying could be true if she thought that the sanctuary was the altar, but it didn't sound like it to me. Thanks for the email. Let's go now to Keith in Beaver Dam.
Good morning.
Beaver Dam, looks like. Wisconsin.
That's right.
Good morning. Beaver Dam. Okay. Got it.
Good morning. I have a situation that... I'll tell you what happened, and then I'll kind of lay some groundwork. Last Sunday, I'm a Lutheran Protestant. My wife, we're both remarried, and she was Catholic and turned Lutheran for me. Yeah. And we were in this just starting service. They were having Bible study, and just end of that, and they were talking about the Catholics and using holy water for one of their services, and our minister had said that they were spraying it all over everybody, and everybody was laughing, kind of poking fun of the Catholics. And this wasn't the first time this happened. And anyway, I've been listening to Relevant Radio for a long time, and my wife, we're both kind of not getting anything out of the services so much, and she would love to go back to be Catholic. And I'm like, I wondered, am I a closet Catholic, or I've listened to the show for a long time, and I just find attracted to it.
That's great. You know, Keith, well, I'd like to think you're a closet Catholic. You're Catholic curious, might be another way to put it. Certainly listening to this program and the other programs on Relevant Radio, I think and I hope will help you to make the decision to become Catholic. On the other hand, in the meantime, if you wanted to read the account of former Lutherans who decided to become Catholic, there's a book, maybe you've heard me recommend it. It's called There We Stood, Here We Stand, edited by Tim Drake. And it's all Lutheran folk who each in his or her own way wound up becoming Catholic, including a number of ministers. And if ever there were a book that would talk directly to some of your experience, I think that would be the book.
What was that again? I didn't.
Yeah. So the book is called There We Stood, Here We Stand.
Oh, There We Stood.
Yeah. And the editor is Tim Drake. He's actually a Wisconsinite, too. I think he's out in the St. Cloud area these days.
My wife and I, when we heard them talk about it and laughing, I could have crawled right under the pew. I just the hurt that went out there of other people that no Catholics or have family members and other people, and I just felt really bad, and I'm kind of wondering, do I look into this more and what is the process of, do we have to get our previous marriages annulled or what is the process?
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about that. So this is a second marriage for both of you, I take it, right?
Correct.
Okay. So yeah, there's some repair work that needs to be done here. The first thing I would ask you is what's the status of your previous marriage? I mean, is your wife still single, or is she remarried? And the same would be true about your wife's first marriage too. Because the reason I ask that question is, and this may be hard to hear, but it's still true, and that is that the church would regard those two first marriages as valid unless it could be shown that they were invalid. So there's the possibility that you're still married to your first wife, and the same would be true for your wife and her first husband. I realize that's a painful thought to contemplate, but that's part of what the church needs to do to examine the situation to find out what's what. So to answer your question, yes, that would definitely be part of the process, would be to go through that so that the church can help you find out. Go ahead, Keith.
My first wife is, she got remarried. In fact, she left with a neighbor. And so that's where that is. And my wife, she's her husband did some things too, and she was going to get an annulment or something. Anyway, I didn't know the process there, and she said she wanted to take what we call communion, and I think there's something there where she couldn't take it unless she had to have her marriage annulled or something, or she couldn't participate in Catholic services, something along that line. And she didn't go through with that. So, right. And he's not married. He's single.
I understand.
He never did remarry. So,
okay. Well, I realize this is probably a very sensitive and painful thing to think about, but that would be part of the process, to answer your question, part of the overall process of becoming Catholic. And I want you to know the Catholic Church will welcome you with open arms. You're welcome. We hope you will become Catholic, and I do too. But to find out, you're going to need to initiate this process known as the annulment process, and that is not difficult. So if you make contact with a local Catholic church and sit down with the pastor and explain the situation and say, we're very interested in returning, my wife's interested in returning to the Catholic Church, and I'm interested in becoming Catholic. And I understand that these two marriages, we need to find out whether or not we're still validly married or not. And that's what the process will help you do. It'll help you determine. Well, really, the church determines it, but it helps you have clarity so that you will know what are the next steps. So,
okay. I have a cousin that's Catholic, and there's a little church down the road that's close to me that they had closed down and they consolidated some other churches. Well, now there's a lot of interest in the Catholic Church and interesting in opening that one. And they've had services there and they've been packed. And I wanted to go there with my cousin just to see that.
It's a Catholic church, you say, right?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you can certainly go. You're welcome to attend anytime you want. You can go to Mass and be there and watch and listen and all those things. Don't receive communion because you're not a Catholic yet. But eventually, right. God willing, the time will come when you can receive Holy Communion. So,
pulling on my strings pretty hard.
I can imagine. Well, that's a good thing. And sometimes there is difficulty involved. But what did Jesus say? Remember, he talks about the pearl of great price. A man discovers a treasure in a field. It's a different parable, but the same idea. He discovers a treasure in a field. And he wants that treasure, so he sells everything. He takes all his money and he buys that field so he can have the treasure. So he's willing to liquidate all of his holdings, everything he's got, because the treasure is more valuable and he's willing to do anything. That's the kind of situation that you're in right now. You know, the pearl of great price, this other parable of you will sacrifice anything to have that precious pearl. And the Catholic faith certainly is that. So those are my thoughts. Maybe make an appointment with your parish priest and start that conversation going. And then you can even talk to him about, well, I'd like to get involved in RCIA and begin to take classes. And hopefully your the wife that you're with now will follow the same suit. And then little by little, you'll begin to see what is needed. But in the meantime, though, keep listening to Relevant Radio, Keith. I hope that that will help you. I really do. Let's go to, let me see here. Let's go to Adrian in Belmont, California. Hi, Adrian.
Hey, Patrick. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I love listening to your show, and thanks. I know we're coming up on time, so I want to ask my question. So my wife and I are both Catholics. My question today is, wanted to find out your thoughts on the commandments of honor thy father and thy mother, because my wife and her mom are not, well, she's not talking to her mom, and the reason why she's not is because they had a fallout regarding money, primarily on estate assets and stuff. And so she doesn't disrespect her in a way where, you know, she'll say hi when we have gatherings, but hasn't spoken to her probably in the last, I would say, 3 years. And I just don't know what the rules and what that means. Is that, you know, if you say hi to your mom but don't really speak to her at all, and try to avoid her in gatherings, does that mean that you're disrespecting her, and how does that affect, you know, that commandment? And is there a part in my, as a husband, do I have, you know, is there a role that I have to play to get them back together so she can start talking to her mom? So I just don't know.
That's a really important question you're asking. Well, these family relationships can be really tricky, to put it lightly. And sometimes it's really hard to know why these estrangements grow up in a family. Daughter against mother, daughter against father, father against son. I mean, they're just strange pathologies in our emotional relationships that are hard to understand. I don't understand them. But if you can talk with your wife and encourage her to do what the spirit as well as the letter of the commandment is, and that is, number one, to acknowledge with respect that her mother exists, you know, saying hello to her is a good first step. But if her mother is impossible to be around, or if her mother is doing something that is injurious or destructive, she's not obligated to spend time with her mom. She's not obligated to hang out with her or anything like that. But if there is a way for them to have a closer relationship, that's better to do that if possible. It's not always possible, though. So it seems like the baseline for her should be, if for some reason they just can't quite be around each other without problems and friction and misunderstanding, then she can honor her mother in public by addressing her and hello, mom, and signs of respect that way, and then leave it to God and pray for her mother and be to honor her from a distance, so to speak. Sometimes it's not possible to have that kind of relationship, and it's not always clear why not. So you just do the best you can. Now, does your role involve encouraging your wife? I think so. You know, if you see a way clear that you can assist her in that regard. But I wouldn't push hard on this issue, because it may be this is just how it is. So she tries her best. She does what she can. She prays for her mom. She waits for an opportunity. And if none ever comes, well, she's done what she could. I think that's probably the most expedient way to do it.
Yeah, no, because she tries. I mean, and I've asked her before. I said, how do you feel? She goes, I do pray for her. It's just I don't agree with what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And she just feels that even if the situation gets fixed, she doesn't feel like the relationship will be the same. So I just, you know, I'm taking a stand from like, okay, I understand where you're coming from. And I know her, like her siblings and everybody else are trying to kind of get them back together. But she just doesn't agree with her way of certain things in life, you know, that they don't agree with. They don't see eye to eye. So
That happens. This is life, and life is weird. And people in families who should be close to each other do weird things to each other. I don't understand it. I've seen it happen myself, and I scratch my head. I'm not sure what to make of it. Well, hang in there, Adrian. Thank you. Let's go now to, let's go to Dolly in Irvine, California. Hi, Dolly.
Hi. Let me just get you off speakerphone here real quick.
Okay.
I was just calling in because my brother's wife
dresses kind of suggestively, you know, lower cut tops and shorter dresses. And she has a 16-year-old daughter who takes a lot of pictures of herself, does TikTok and all of that. And she does go to a Catholic school, and she has a, you know, she has a heart for the Lord. But and they're all Catholic, they all go to church, but I don't think my sister-in-law really recognizes, you know, what she's doing. She's from the Philippines. She's moved here to the U.S. It's been a big cultural change for her. And I don't know how to say to my brother, look, I don't think this is really teaching your daughter the right thing and being modest and leading other men to sin, et cetera, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know how to approach that with him. And, you know, because I don't want to step on anybody's toes or mm-hmm. overreach, but I think he should know, and I don't think he recognizes that.
Well, maybe he recognizes it. For men, it's hard not to recognize that, I'll tell you what. But maybe no one's had the gumption to say anything about it. So maybe in your own polite, loving way, you could say something to him and say, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into a big thing, but this is like it's having a ripple effect where it's causing other people to stumble. And you're in a perfect position as the husband to do something about it. I think you could give that message in a tactful way, don't you?
Yeah. I just thought I'd check in so I don't go in like a bull at a china shop, you know, when you just say too much. So maybe I'll just like write it down and say it to him over the phone since he was on the other coast anyways. But,
nice email.
I really don't think he realizes that, you know, it is a sin to be dressing like that. I don't think he knows that.
Okay. I've got to press on to a 21-hour break, Dolly. Forgive me. I hope that's helpful to you. I really do. We'll see what happens. I'll be with you again tomorrow, same Pat time, same Pat channel. I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.